All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Yutet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is discussing now the inks that can be used to write a get. So it says, Bechol Kotevim. You can write with any type of ink, which the Gemara then asks, well, then what does that come to include? Because they're going to give you a list of inks. So what is added by Bechol Kotevim? Bidio, you're allowed to use ink. I'm not going to translate them now because the Gemara itself we'll attempt to translate them, because these are found in the Mishnah many times. That which is found in the Mishnah, the Gemara in Bavel doesn't know or is not necessarily familiar with the words that are Hebrew words or Tanaic words, and so they translate them into their Aramaic. So when the Gemara translates them, then we'll go over what they actually are. Bisam, Bisikra, Bikomos, Ubikan Katum, Ucho Davar Shehu Shel Kayama, is one possible girsa. The other girsa is Ukhol Davar Shehu Shel Roshem. So the Mishnah requires that you use some type of ink, and we give list of types of inks that are fine, and the common denominator between them is either that they are a Davar Shel Kayama, that they are something that lasts a long time, or a Roshem, that leaves some sort of indelible etching inside of whatever you write, so that it's recognizable, the Ktav, over a long period of time. Ein kotvim, davar shel yikayama would just be something of permanence or a long duration, whereas davar shel roshem means that it leaves some sort of imprint, marking, etching on the item that you wrote on. So for instance, when you write on paper even, you could feel on the other side, you feel that there was some sort of impression made on the paper. So that would be the idea of roshem versus kayama. Ein kotvim lo b'mashkim velo b'mei peirot, so you can't use mashkim, some sort of liquids, or mei peirot, or juices. Similarly, the difference between them is that mashkim, as described by the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to the Mishnah and Schita, certain fruits or items were used for their juices in particular, like olives, grapes, strawberries, or berries of sorts. They were squeezed for their liquids, and those are called mashkim. Mei peirot are other fruits that have liquids in them, but they weren't necessarily particularly used for those liquids. So for instance, apples, oranges, and so on and so forth, in their day they weren't necessarily used for their juices they were eaten, even though today we use them for their juices. So mashkim would have been items that are standardly used for their liquids, whereas mei peirot are other fruits that have liquids in them, but they're not always used. And that's the difference in schita and Shabbat. Schita d'oraita, squeezing out liquids from a fruit, d'oraita only applies to olives and grapes. Everything else is midrabanan, and then there's a machloket about certain of the fruits in the middle, which are like tutim, berries. Velo b'chol davar sheinu mitkayim. And on the other side, anything that is not permanent in nature, you can't write with. Now, ala kol kotvim. So here we spoke about the inks. Now we're speaking about the quote-unquote paper, that which it's written on. So you can write on anything. Ala leshel zayit. You can use an olive leaf. Most of the Rishonim over here explain that the leshel zayit, or the uniqueness of the leshel zayit, is that it lasts. That it's the type of leaf that even after it's picked, remains intact for a long period of time. And that's what the Mishnah is after, is telling you that you need a davar shemitkayim, something that has duration to it, similar to the ink, so too the paper that you write on has to have a certain amount of duration, and the leaf of the zayit lasts for a long time, doesn't go bad for a long time. The difficulty with an aleshel zayit, obviously, is that it's very small, so you can write a get on anything. No recommended size or minimum size for a get, as long as you can read it or it can be written properly. The Rambam, on the other hand, appears in Mishnayot, seems to learn from this just the opposite. That Aleh Shel Zayit shows you that you do not need paper that is mitkayim. You simply need ink that is mitkayim. And therefore, as long as when it was written, it could be read, and the ink was something that would have lasted, the underlying paper does not have to be something that lasts for long duration. Valkeren Shel Para, on the horn of the cow. Venoten La Ta Para, and it gives her the whole cow. So two things here. One about the Keren Shel Para, is, first of all, it's smoother than other horns or other antlers or anything that you find on animals. The Keren Shel Para is much smoother, so you can actually write on it. That's number one. Number two is it has duration to it, according to many, because unlike other horns of other animals, it does not fall off naturally. It must be cut off. Therefore, if you wrote it on the Keren Shel Para, it would remain for a long duration. Again, according to those Rishonim, believe that that's important here. And the last thing is he has to give her the Para itself, because we have a rule, the Katov V'Natan, that when you write it, the next step has to be to give. If you have to do any other pi'ula, any other activity in the interim, then it doesn't work. If you sever the horn between the time that you wrote it and gave it to her, then that activity in the middle makes it a pasul get, because then it was v'katov, v'chatach, v'natan. So it has to be directly v'katov, v'natan, and that's why the Mishnah stipulates here that if he writes on the Karen of the Para, he has to give her the Para. Elim Kain, of course, the Karen Shel Para was already detached before he wrote it. Ayad yad shel eved, v'noten la'ad eved. You can write it on the arm of a eved kanani, and then give her the entire eved kanani, for obvious reasons, why has to give her the entire eved kanani, but here, he's considered the eved kanani as a din-like property, and so therefore, like you would write on the keren of the para, if you write on the arm of an eved kanani, the same status would be applicable. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says you don't write on anything that is alive, something that, like an animal, a human being, none of those are usable for gitin, and not on food items. None of those should be used. Again, the Gemara will explain what exactly the machloket is over here, but obviously Rabbi Yossi Aglili would like to see things that are of a more permanent nature and that don't move around or leave. All right, so now the Gemara goes through the inks that were mentioned in the Mishnah and translates each one of the items. So dio, it says in the Mishnah, is diuta. So diuta is a type of ink. If you look in the Rabbeinu Tam, the Tosafot brings over here, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, dio shelanu, hu karui dio. Our dio, our ink, that's what the dio is speaking about. Lo otosho sim afatsim, ta lo mikre dio. And not the ink that's made from galls, that is not called dio. And he says, if you write with ink, that includes within it what's called afatsim, the galls, which we discussed before, that if they put that into the ink, then you have a problem now, because our Sifrei Torah, and we're going to see later on in today's daf, we've actually mentioned earlier in the Masechta, that you have to do ibud orot, that you actually have to tan the skins with afatsim in there. So we spoke about the fact that today we don't use the afatsim, so then how do we get over that problem? We replace it with sid or some other material that does the same thing or similar effect as afatsim. But what we're going to see in today's daf is that if you write with an ink that is similar to the underlying paper, then it's not called writing. When you're writing on the material that's of this similar nature, then you're writing basically ink on ink or afatsim on afatsim. And so that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says here. Since our klaf uses afatsim in order to make it, then if you have afatsim in the ink, that's a problem of writing with the ink that is made out of the same material as the cloth itself. And then the Gemara says, sam is sama. Now Rashi over here translates sama as orpiment, which is an arsenic sulfide, which has a yellowish color to it and was used for dyeing as well as an ink in those times. Sikra, which usually in the Gemara, Sikra is associated with a red type of stain. Amar Rabba Bar Chana is Sikrata Shema. So again, a similar word. And Rashi says, Tzeva Adom Shikorim Minio. It's a type of red dye, which comes from the minium. And Komos is Koma. That's a ink that is prepared from some sort of gum of the tree or sap of the tree. As you can see, Rashi says, it's Sraf Kailan. Kankantum, which we bumped into in other places, is a copper sulfide base. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Shmuel, Charta Dush Kape. That this kankantum, this copper sulfide, but it's actually the blackening polish that is used by the shoemakers. That after they make the leather shoes and they want to blacken the shoes, this is what they used for it. And Rashi calls that an ornament. And then Tosfot has issues with that, because if you translate it as ornament, then it becomes similar to something that Rashi is going to translate in the upcoming Braitot. And therefore, Tosafot likes the translation of the Rashbam from Eruvin, which is that it is Karka Yeruka, that it is a yellowish-greenish earth, which is a copper base, shekorim vitriol. And so vitriol, which is a copper sulfide, is what Tosfot likes to call this. And the kan katum is usually translated as a copper sulfide here, rather than what Rashi translated as ornament. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says that when you make a Sefer Torah, you're allowed to put ornament into the ink because it's not kan katum, and therefore it is permitted to use for the writing of a Sefer Torah. I mean, those are the broad translations of them. You should know that the Rishonim over here have many different opinions about each one of these items. Okay, b'chol davar shu mitkayem, letuye mai. So what does that come to include when you have b'chol kodvim or any davar shu mitkayem? What does that come to include? Letuye haidatani Rabbi Chanina. Comes to include these items that Rabbi Chanina added. Kadvo me'taria va'afza kasher. If he uses this me'taria, Rashi says me'gishamim, rainwater. Obviously, it doesn't just mean plain rainwater, because plain rainwater would not be anything that was an ink. So it has to be something where the me'gishamim soaked something or fell off of something. Some suggest that it is water that came off the roof that got saturated through the wood of the roof and then brought with it some sort of color to it. Rashi himself says, Meitaria maim shashorim bo pri, shukain afatzim goals. So he says that rather it's a type of Meitaria and Aftsa. You have two different ways to use the galls from the tree. Many times they use the oak galls, which are these growths that are on the oak tree, and you can prepare them in one of two ways. You can either boil them, or you can soak them. That would be the difference here between the Meitaria and the Aftsa are both using these galls, but one is preparing them, as Rashi says over here, when they are shoreh, when they soak them, and the other one is using it when they actually boil it, and they cook it, and that's how they get the pigment out of the gall. So both of those, Meitari v'Aftsa, are kasher. Tani Rabbi Chiya, kadvo be'avar, b'shachor, u'b'shichur, kasher. If you write with, now, avar is generally lead. You can look in Rashi, he says, sheshaf ha'ofer b'mayim u'mashchirim. He doesn't mean literally with lead, but he rather means with shavings of lead that have been put into the water, and cause the water to darken into a black ink. So you're creating the ink by adding the lead into the water. So it's a liquid-based ink, not a solid lead, where you would write with the solid lead. That's the way Rashi learns it. And from that, you would conclude that actually, avar itself, lead itself, would be problematic, but ink that was made from a water-based lead would be fine. You should just know that the Tosfot read over here says just the opposite, that if you use avar itself, if you use lead itself, that it would be fine, but if you use lead that's soaked in water, that would not be okay. All right, then we have bishachor, which is, Rashi says is pachmin, which is coals, so it's using some sort of charcoal to write with. Ubishichor, Rashi says over here that it's chartadush kape. This is where Tosfot took issues with Rashi, because over here, the Gemara seems to be suggesting that the brightot are additive to our Mishnah, not repetitive to our Mishnah. And if you say shichur is the charta dushkape, which is the polish or the black that was used by the shoemakers, then this equates it to the kankantum that we mentioned before. And so Tosfot thinks that that's incorrect, and that's why Tosfot separated between the ardiment and the kankantum, where Rashi explained that the kankantum was ardiment and said that's the same thing as the shichur down below. Tosfot was unwilling to accept that, and therefore he says the kankantum is this vitriol or the copper sulfide, whereas the shichur over here is the ardiment that we were speaking about, or Rashi is speaking about, and differentiates between those two items. Others say that the shichur is a different type of coal, which is, one is a natural found coal or charcoal, and one of them is a man-made charcoal, which is charcoal that's made from burning of wood, and then that charcoal is the difference. So that's the shachor and the shichur. All of those items are kasher. Itmar hamavir dio agabi sikra b'shabbat. One who uses ink and then writes over letters that already exist, but those letters were written b'sikra, which before we said was some sort of red-based ink. So he takes this blacker ink, or it seems to be here, that it's a much better ink or writing solution. And he writes over, tracing over the letters that exist. Rabbi Yochanan Meir Shlakish, Damrei Tarvayu, Chayav Shtayim. In that case, you're Chayav two Chataot, Achat Mishum Kotev, Achat Mishum Mochek. You are Chayav twice. One, because you erased the existing writing that was there. And number two is because then you wrote on Shabbat. You created letters. Now remember that Mechika on Shabbat, you only Chayav for, which is Mechika Kedei Lichtov. Because otherwise, if you're just erasing on Shabbat, you're not Chayav, because that is Kilkul. That's just ruining something. In Shabbat, you need a Mlechet Makshevet. You need a constructive type of Melacha to be done. So the only time that Mechika is Asur on Shabbat is if you erase it in order to write. So over here, you actually, in one single swipe or motion, here you do both of them, which is that you erase the existing writing that's there, but you're writing on top of it. So you're erasing the old writing with better writing on top of it, and therefore you are chayav both for kotev and for mochek. Dio agabe dio, sikra agabe sikra patur. And then if you write with ink on top of ink, or sikra on top of sikra, this red on top of the other red dye that they used, then that is patur. Because there you made no improvement to the ink that exists. So again, your mechika was not a valuable mechika because the ktiva was not a valuable ktiva. Because the ktiva just did the same thing that exists. And then you lack melechet machshevet, which is a constructive melecha that does something that was better than there was before. And therefore, you are patur. Patur means patur aval asur, asur de rabbanan, but patur mi deuraita. Tosfot over here quotes the Gemara that you're going to see on Shabbat, which is a very fundamental Gemara, the case where Rabbi Yehuda speaks about the fact that if a Sefer Torah was written with dio, but the sofer forgot to be mekadesh the shemot, forgot to write the shemot Hashem with the right intent on them, he can go back afterwards and trace over them and add the aspect of lishma to the writing. So Tosfot over here says, you see from there that writing with dio on top of dio has an impact or has value to it. And so then why do we see over here when you're writing dio on top of dio or sikra on top of sikra, why do you say that it has no value? We see there that it has some sort of chashivut. Tosfot over here differentiates and says, V'omer Rabbeinu Yitzchak de Lekaman, V'adai sheketav rishon haya shelo lishma, ketav hasheni oseh lishma, chashiv ketav l'Rav Yehuda. U'l'Ravacha afilu l'Rabbanan, chashiv ketav gabi get. So what he's suggesting over here is, yes, that would be considered ketav when you do something constructive like this. Aval hocha, sheketav sheni inu metakein klum, afilu Rav Yehuda modelo chashiv ketav. So Tosfot differentiates between the case there, where the new writing does something that is constructive in nature, which is that it makes it into a lishma before where it wasn't lishma. So then on Shabbat, the same activity, the same action in two different cases can have two different meanings. When you simply write with dio on top of dio, you've done nothing on Shabbat because you did nothing constructive to what was there beforehand. On the other hand, if it was lo lishma and you switched it to lishma, then even though, again, you did the exact same thing, which was dio on top of dio, and you did not improve it in terms of the ink or the writing, but the lishma aspect is an improvement, and you'd be chayav on Shabbat in that case. Tosfot differentiates in that case and says there's a different din. One din is a din here, or possibly a din in Gittin, whereas one is a din in lishma, and that's why we would differentiate the cases. Some of the other Rishonim say simply, this is not according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. This is according to the Shita of the Rabbanan, who believe that you can't do that. That you can't write over the ink in order to create the lishma. And therefore, our Gemara is not following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. You don't have to reconcile between the two of them. It's just two different opinions. Then the last case is sikra agave dio. Amri la chayav, amri la patur. So then when you write with sikra, which seems to be a lower quality ink, so using the sikra and you're writing on top of dio. Amri la chayav. Some say you're chayav for doing that. And Amila Patur, some say it's not problematic midoraita. Amila Chayav, Mochekhu. Why are you Chayav? You're not Chayav for Ktiva, but rather you're Chayav for Mechika, because you actually lowered the quality of the writing on this paper. So when you use the type of ink that is of a lower quality, you erased the other ink that was there. And so Tosafot over here says, how can it be Mochek? We just learned before that Mochek, Almanat, Lichtov is chayav, mochek by itself is not chayav. So So Tosfot says, "Hachashiv lebochek amanach tov de mistama omed lachzor v'lichtov alav b'diol." Tosfot says the reason that it's considered to be mochek here is because after you lower the quality of the writing, most likely you're going to write with dio over it again, and therefore that tiva is really a mochek amanat lichtov. And then when you write with dio on top of the sikra, it is more noticeable, it stands out more, and therefore there's a constructive aspect to this erasing. Rashi, on the other hand, does not make such a qualification, and he says that mocheku v'lo kotev shemitchila ya katuv hagun me'ata. And so others explain Rashi to be saying, you do have mocheka menach tov, because you wrote. In the end, you wrote with sikra. Now, you're not going to be chayav k'tiva, because from the side of k'tiva, you didn't do something constructive. You did something negative or destructive because you lowered the quality of the ink that was there. But as far as the mochek is concerned, you erased the dio and you wrote with sikra. Because the sikra going over the dio ruined this dio that was there as if you erased it. And you now have writing with sikra. It may not be as good a writing, but you still did mochek amanat lichtov. And therefore they view Rashi as seeing the mochek amanat lichtov built in to what you're doing here, rather than saying, oh, in the future, like Tosfot says, you're going to write with dio on top of that, and therefore it'll be beneficial. Those are two different ways to understand the mochek over here. Amri la patur, some say you're patur, mikalkel hu, you're doing something destructive rather than constructive, and therefore there's no reason to be chayav in Shabbat, because Shabbat requires melechet machshevet. Right, so by minei reish lakish rabbi Yochanan, edim shein yodim lachtom. If we have edim that do not know how to sign their names, again, in their day, that was a much more common phenomenon. Most people were illiterate, as well as most people did not know how to write. That's why Sofrim were so important, I mean, in terms of both their literacy as well as their ability to write. And you went to Sofrim to document things and to write for you, because you didn't necessarily know how to write. Ma'u, what is the din? Sheikhtavu lehem b'sikra v'chatmu. So what he suggests, based on the Gemara that we just saw, we should write it in sikra, and they'll come right over it, trace over it in dio. So then, we would consider it ketav, like we just said before. Tav el yon ktav. Oenu ktav is the upper writing, meaning the dio that you do on top of the sikra, is that deemed to be writing or not to be deemed to be writing? Amalei, enu ktav. Yochanan responds and says it's not writing. That's not considered to be writing. Amalei, valo li mantanu rabbeinu, ktav el yon ktav linyan Shabbat. We just saw before, Rabbi Yochanan v'reish lakish to amrei tarvayu, that the gavei Shabbat, when you write with dio on top of sikra, that is considered to be ktav. So why don't you say the same thing by get? Because we think that we should extrapolate a din, therefore we're going to act on that extrapolation. Rashi says something interesting over here. Rashi says, maybe over there we were machmir, by the end Shabbat we're choshev, that is a problem, but naseh maseh, now you want to be mekil, and use it as something to say that you would also be mutar to use it by a get? That's an extrapolation that you wouldn't allow. You can be machmir, but who says you can be mekel? By the case of Shabbat, it's machmir because we say it's asur. You're not allowed to do dio on top of sikra. On the other hand, over here, you're being mekel because you're saying the dio on top of the sikra makes it into a kosher get. So that'd be lakel. You can't do that. But then Rashi adds in something very interesting. He says that Rabbi Yochanan lives post-Churban HaBayit. And since he lives post-Churban HaBayit, he says, I'm not sure if we were in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, I would have told you to bring a Korban, a Chatat, in the Mikdash. Meaning that I'm only doing this Mitzada Safek, not Mitzada Vadai. And so that if the Beit HaMikdash was extant, I wouldn't tell you to bring a Korban, because that could be Chulin Vazara. So I'm only saying by Shabbat it's Asur, because there's no ramifications halachically from that, aside from it being a sore, but there's no, you don't have to bring a korban, we're not going to give a death penalty on it today, because none of those are relevant today. So that's the way Rashi learns it, which is a step further than what is said in the Gemara here. He's saying that Rabbi Yochanan's whole position, the Gabei Shabbat, is a safek, and possibly not out of a definitive psak, rather just saying, why not be machmir, because there's no real implications to being machmir, except to say, don't do it. On the other hand, when you come to a get, where there are ramifications, but then we won't use it. Most other Rishonim read it simply, which is, what's true by Shabbat doesn't necessarily be true by Gitin. By Shabbat, the determination is not simply whether it's writing or not, you need melechet machshevet. Melechet machshevet by Shabbat has a different definition than writing by a get. And so just because something's asur by Shabbat, because of Melechet Machshavet, over there when you improve the writing on the paper by using dio on top of sikra, so on Shabbat that might be deemed writing or melacha because of Melechet Machshavet. Whereas over here by Gitin, all you have to have is writing. It doesn't matter if you wrote it in sikra, it's just as good as if it was written in dio. And so writing in dio on top of the sikra might be nothing vis-a-vis the Gitin, because there it's not about Melechet Machshavet. And so you can't extrapolate a din from Shabbat to a din of Gitin. I'll just note here that generally the term of Melechet Machshavet by Shabbat is used the kula, which is, means that generally we say someone is patur because it's not Melechet Machshavet. So someone can engage in an activity, and even though it looks like a molacha, and looks like everything that would be chayav, nevertheless, they're not chayav because it's not Melechet Machshavet. Like things like davar sheinu mitkavein, melacha shein tzricha de gufa, where it looks like you're doing the melacha, but it's not because it's not Melechet Machshavet. In rare occasion, Melechet Machshavet is the chumrah. Best example is in the Gemara in Baba Kama, by the case of Zorev Aruach Mesayato, where a person is, he's winnowing through throwing it into the wind. Over there, the Gemara in Baba Kama calls that groma, which is that the wind is causing it, and you would not be chayav for nizakim. Yeah, the Gemara there says, the Gabei Shabbat, you will be chayav, because that's your intent. It's Melechet Machshavet, you're trying to use the wind. So over there, Melechet Machshavet is used the chumrah, which again is an unusual usage of Melechet Machshavet. Here too, it's possible that if you read like the other Rishonim, not like Rashi, Melechet Machshavet would also be used the chumrah over here, which is that Melechet Machshavet would make you chayav in Shabbat, but not considered to be ktav legabei gitin. And so once again here, you would have a manifestation of Melechet Machshavet being the chumrah where you'd be chayav in Shabbat, but would not have halachic application in other areas. Gemara says, Itmar. Edim shen yodim lachtom. If you have edim that don't know how to sign, what do you do to help out over here? We need the edim to sign, but they don't know how to write, or they don't know how to sign their names. So Rav Amar Mikarim lahem niyar chalak, umimalim et ekraim. Diyo. We tear the paper for them, and then they fill it in with ink. We saw earlier, this was already brought back earlier in the Masechta, when we did there, Rashi suggested that the meaning of this is that they actually etch into the parchment, and then they Edim fill the ink into those etches, and that's how they write. Most of the other Rishonim said it was stenciling, that you actually cut out a shapes of the letters and place them on top of the area where you wanted to write, and then they filled that with ink, the stencil area, and that's how they signed their names. Ushmol Amar Be'avar, that you use lead over here. Rashi says, L'shafshef be'chaticha shel avar alaklaf u'mashchiro eino ktav. That if you rub with the lead itself on the klaf and it makes it black, that is not considered to be ktav. So what Shmuel suggests is that they wrote with some sort of ink that is not a good ink, and then having the edim write over it, then the first thing was not a ktav, and they just follow whatever is there, and then they write, and then it is a good ktav. On the other hand, Rav says that we do something that allows them to write without having writing there, which is either we etch it and have them fill with ink, or we have stencils which allow them to fill it with ink, and that's how you get to the letters that you need. So today you could do something similar, and Sofrim used this actually today, which is you can use an underlighting, and you can have the letters written on the underlighting, and then have it show up on the parchment that you're writing on. And by doing that, you're really almost in a sense tracing the letters. I mean, you always have to write the letters. You're not tracing. But today, many Sofrim use this, which is if you have an underlight and then you have a printout of like the mezuzah, the tefillin that you need to write, you put that there and then you put the klaf on top of it. When you place the klaf on top of it, the light from underneath shows through the letters that are printed out underneath the parchment. And when you write, it leads to many less mistakes because you have it printed out and you have it written and you get it in different font sizes and you can write as you want there and it makes it much easier. That's one of the requirements of writing is mitoch haktav. You can't write by heart. You have to write looking and then writing. So this solves that problem too, because you're looking at the ktav there. So you're writing mitoch haktav gamke. You could have done similar thing over here, which is what they're trying to do. They're trying to have them write, and it be considered writing without having them make mistakes or with having it already there. So somehow by creating the letters without it being writing. Again, you can do it today by that underlining, or here, Rav and Shmuel are discussing methods for doing that. Bavar. Salkadatcha. Wait, you're using lead. Va'atani rabchia katavo be'avar b'shachor b'shichur kasher. Lokasha ha'ba'avra ha'damayid avra. So the difference here is one of them is real lead, and one of them is water-based or soluble lead. And again, Rashi reads it as the soluble lead being the good ink, and the hardened lead being the problematic ink. And Tosfot reads it just the opposite. He says that Shmuel Lami lo yechshir ela b'mayid avra b'nei shenu davar mitkayem. He says that you have to use the water-based lead here, and that's what Shmuel is referring to, because that is something that is not permanent. Whereas the case where you are, or the writing is good, is ba'avar, which is lead itself. And so the Tosfot Reed learns just the opposite of Rashi over here as to which is a good ktav, which is not a good ktav. And therefore he says here, Shmuel means the water-based lead, because that's not a good ktav. And that water-based lead, then you can write over it. And again, the halacha, the Rama Paskins, like the Tosfot Reed's reading, which is lead, is a solid lead, and that would be kasher, whereas the soluble lead would not be a good ink. Rebel bar, b'mei milin. You can use mei milin. So now, Rashi over here explains what's mei milin. Mayim shesharah behem afatzim shchukim. It's a case where you took crushed up galls, and then you soaked them in water. V'ha'atani Rabbi Chanina katvo b'mei tarya v'afza kasher. So this sounds like the items that we mentioned above, where you can utilize the galls for writing. And Rashi described over there was the soaking of the galls in the water. It seems like you're doing the same thing. So lokasha ha de afitz ha de lo afitz. It depends on the klaf itself. The question is, was the klaf made using afatzim, or is it not used making afatzim? She'ein mei milin agabi mei milin. This is what we discussed before, that if the underlying writing material, the parchment, has the same material in it as the ink, or what's making the ink visible, or the part of the ink that makes the mitkayim, is the same material that's used in the parchment itself, then it doesn't work. And that's what Rashi explains over here. Hadafitza, haklafim mi'ubadim ba'afatzim. If the klaf itself was tanned through using afatzim, roshmim aleim et ha'edim b'mei milim, then you can write with this material, because the lo haviktav. That's not considered to be ktav, because the parchment itself is made with afatzim in it. The ink is made with afatzim. Sharei marei aklapim kemarei aktav. Then they have the same color or pigment in them. Veinu nikar. And therefore the writing is not clear. Hilkach ein mimilim al gabei mimilim. And for that reason, mimilim on top of a mimilim is no good. And so by doing that, you're using an ink that would not be classified as an ink. And therefore, when they edim write over it, they're actually doing the writing. So it leaves some light marking on the parchment, but it's not a real writing. And therefore, they can copy over that and sign their names, because the first person who did it didn't really write over there. So that would be the difference between afitz and lo afitz. Shemi emilin agabi emilim. Rapapa mar barok. You do it with saliva. You roshem with the rok, and then they write on it. So again, either that gives some sort of little indication of where they're supposed to sign, whether it's because of the moisture that's there, or leaves some sort of marking on the parchment, and through that, they will know where to sign or how to sign on it. V'chein orilei rapapa bapapa Torah berok. And that's what rapapa instructed to. Papa Torah would mean papa the ox. Obviously, papa is not an ox, but rather he's the ox dealer. So it's papa the ox dealer. He told him to use berok. That's what he told him to do. In those cases, where they needed to have somebody sign or write, they allowed you to use this type of rope or saliva, which clearly is not a permanent or indelible ink, to use that up front and then have the edim write on top of it, because then whatever you wrote up front was not considered writing. And when they write over it, that is considered to be writing. Bahani mile bikitin. All of these dispensations are true by gitin, but al shtarot, lo. That is not the case by regular shtarot. As Rashi says, and we'll see in the Gemara again, mishum iguna. This is a kula because of agunot, and therefore we won't be makpid on this. We'll use this kula to allow the edim that are here who don't know how to write, we'll have them sign on this case. Whereas by other shtarot, just find other edim that can sign on the shtar. Generally, when you have the edim on the shtar are not so essential or irreplaceable. By the case of gitin, we only have a limited number of people who have the information, and it's essential to get this woman to be released and not be an aguna. And so for that reason, we are makil to allow these individuals who don't know how to sign, because otherwise we're going to lose them as edim. And then to find other edim to replace them is going to be very difficult, and we don't want to leave the woman in a difficult position. There was somebody who used this dispensation by other shtarot. Rav Kana gave him malkot for misapplication of this halacha by using these kulot by a regular shtar and not just by a get. Tanya kavati de Rav. So we have a braita that supports Rav's explanation. It's going all the way back. Here we're asking edim that don't know how to write, what do you do for them? Rav said, mikarim lehem niyar chalak. You rip or you tear a clean piece of paper. Again, Rashi says it means you etch into it, whereas others say that you create a stencil for them. So we have a braita that supports Rav's. Edim shein yodim lachtom, mikarim lehem niyar chalak, malim et akraim dio. So here that's exactly what Rav said. And again, this is a braita that we quoted earlier on in Daf Tet, and this is where we discussed the inyan, and there we saw Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But where is that true? Bigitei nashim. That's only true by a get. By other types of documents, including a document of emancipation. If they know how to read and write, then they can sign. If not, they can't sign. So then the Gemara says, Priya mandakar shmei. Why is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel discussing reading at all? The Tanna Kamma didn't mention anything about reading. The Gemara says, Asure mechzera. That you're missing some of the transition between the Tanna Kamma and the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'hakitani. Edim shein yodim likrot. If the edim don't know how to read, korim lifnehem. Then you read the document to him. V'chotmim. And then they sign it. V'shein yodim lachtom. And if they don't know how to sign, then what you do is you bring a nir chalak, you do the whole operation that they mentioned before, either etching or stencil. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, b'med var mamurim. When is this dispensation allowed? Bigitei nashim. Aval shichrei avadim v'shar kol ha-shtarot. Im yodim likraot v'lachtom chotmim im lav ein chotmim. By other shtarot, if they know how to read and write, then they can read and write for the document. Otherwise, they're not good etim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, my time at the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position that this is only applicable by gitei nashim? Shelo yubnot Yisrael agunot. Says it straight out. Now this is a takana for agunot, that we want to protect these women from being anchored, from being stuck. And therefore, we have these dispensations to allow for people who are literate, for people who do not know how to write, and we will use them, even though in other situations, we'll just tell you, get better edim. Get someone who knows how to read. Get someone who knows how to write. Over here, we're going to give you this dispensation so that we can get the women out of this problem. Amar Rava, halacha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'rav gamda mishmei d'Rav amar, ein halacha. Gamda, the name of Rava, says halacha is not like him. V'alakiman. Then who does he hold like? If he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who does he hold like? Ki Rabbanan. He holds like the Rabbanan. Well, if you hold like the Rabbanan make no distinction between Gitim and Shtar Sharot. V'ahu, the last line on the previous Amud said, how the avad uvda b'shar shtarot v'nagde Rav Kahana. So we saw in the last line there that Rav Kahana gave malkot to somebody who used this dispensation by shar shtarot. Now if you baskin like the Rabbana, I mean, what was Rav Kahana doing over here? Targama akriya. That was an issue of kriya. So the way Rashi explains it over here, targama akriya, shim dim lachtom, afal pish enyo dim likrot, shapir dami. They know how to sign, even though they don't know how to read, that's alright. Bikarei kamayu, achrinei kerabonon. They read it in front of them like the Rabbonon. Ugrav Kahana shenil dim lachtom. That's the case where they don't know how to sign. So Rav Kahana said, no way by signing. If they don't know how to sign, we're not going to allow for this dispensation by Shar Shtarot. But over here, when Rav Gamda, in the name of Rava, says the Allah is not like Rav Shimon, but rather like the Rabbonon, he was talking about the reading aspect. That if they don't know how to read, you can read it in front of them. And so therefore, their positions are not necessarily opposing or can be reconciled, because here they're saying the law is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that by other shtarot you're allowed to read the shtar to the individuals. So if they're illiterate, you can read it to them, even by other shtarot, and law like the Rabbanan. Rav Kahana was dealing with the signature aspect of it, and there Rav Kahana says if you sign on other documents and use this dispensation of using a stencil or an etching, that we will not allow. Rav Yehuda mitztayer kari v'chotin. Rav Yehuda, when he already had reached a ripe old age, and it was difficult for him to read, mitztaer, he pressed himself, he pushed himself in order to read, v'chatim, and then sign on it, because he believed that you have to read the shtar, and then sign on the shtar. And therefore he read the shtar himself, even though it was difficult for him, and then signed on it. Amalei ula lo tzarich, you don't need to do that. Da Rabbi Elazar, Mara de Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar, who is the authority in Eretz Yisrael, Karu Kameh v'chatim. They read it to him, and then he signs on it. He doesn't physically read it himself, but they read it in front of him. For Rav Nachman, Karu Kameh, Safrei Dayine v'chatim. And Rav Nachman also, the Sofrim of the judges, meaning the scribes of the court, the stenographers, would read it for him, v'chatim, and then he would sign it. Now the Gemara qualifies that. Tosfot already earlier when we discussed this during the Masechta did the same thing. He qualifies this. V'dafka Rav Nachman, v'safrei dayone, di'etlehu emta. The reason there is because of these two parties have a certain amount of fear in them. And that is, of a Rav Nachman v'safrei achrine, Rav Nachman and any other sofrim, or safrei dayone v'ini shachrine lo, or if these scribes and another individual would not be true. It happens to be that the combination of being Rav Nachman and the Sofrim, the combination makes it that it's okay. What was the combination makes it okay? Rav Nachman was the head of the Beit Din. He is, we know that, a big judge, a posek, because many times Rav Nachman, in terms of halachot, tells us information about a certain takanot that were put in place because he saw what was going on in the court cases. And he saw that people were cheating, or people were having, like, by Kofar Bakol, case of Kofar Bakol, Rav Nachman institutes a Shavuot Heset to stop people being Kofar Bakol, because they know if they're Kofar Bakol, they won't have to take a Shavuot. So what did everybody do? Even though they might have been Modem Miksat, then they were Kofar Bakol. So if you institute a Shavuot by Kofar Bakol, it might change the dynamic. And Rav Nachman, who's a Dayan, recognizes the problem, and he institutes it. So here, Rav Nachman is a Dayan. That's number one. Number two is, he's married into the household of the Beit Nasi. And so therefore, he has political power and halachic power. And so the two of those together create an environment in which the Sofrim would be scared to do something wrong or to lie about what was written in the contracts. Because not only is he halachic authority, he has political power. And so then the Sofrim have an imta, and that imta allows us to know, or gives us the ability to feel comfortable that they're going to tell the truth. This has applications in many areas of halacha. We've spoken about it again, that governmental institutions can create an environment where people will act honestly or properly because of the fear of losing their job, of being caught by the government, and that fear factor can then make it that they are, for us, honest, or we can trust them in those cases because there's enough of an external pressure that forces them to act properly, that accomplishes the equivalent of getting an honest answer or a deem to tell us that this is true. So this is one of those cases where Rav Nachman's position causes Sofrim to know that if they played around with this, they'd get into trouble, and therefore we could trust the Sofrim to read it to Rav Nachman. But what it establishes is that you need trustworthy people to read the document to you, because otherwise you could be signing on whatever they tell you they're signing on, and it could be a real problem. So, Rav Papa, Kiva'ata l'kamei shtara parsa. So Rav Papa, when he used to get a Persian contract that came in front of him, David Barkaot shel Kutim, that was put together in a non-Jewish court, Makri l'hu l'shnei Kutim, zeh shelo bifnei zeh. So, Rav Papa solves the problem, and he's basically, right, he gets an independent verification. He has two different individuals, read it to him, b'mesiach l'fi tumo. And not only does it do it in a way that makes it that he has independent verification, he also basically talks to them in a conversation. He doesn't make it sound like this is an official document or that there's going to be halachic ramifications of what they're doing. He just discusses with them. And in discussing with them, he says, oh, can you just tell me, can we discuss what this means? And then he speaks to them, and then they translate it for him on the fly. So first of all, they're not looking to change or do anything because they think it's a informal conversation. And in that informality, he does it twice independently, and that gives him verification as to what's in there. Umagmi beimi mishabde. And once he does that, he was willing through that shtar to collect from encumbered property. So now Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Amar li Rabuna Barnatan, Achi Amar Meimar, Hai shtar of Parsa, Dechatim Alei Sade Yisrael. If you have this Persian contract that has Jewish signatories, Magbiim beimi mishabde. Because then you can take from Mishubadim. Again, we had this back on Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara says, how could you do that? How could you take from Mishabde? Remember that the Edim that sign on it are basically the kol. They become the publicity surrounding this contract or this loan that's taken out. And that's what protects the other creditors or buyers of the land because they know that there's an already an encumberment on this property or this individual. But here, how do they know? Ba'alo yodei, the mikre. They don't know what they're reading. Persian was not the spoken language of the people. And so therefore here, they see Persian, they don't know what they're writing. How could the signatures mean anything? Bidiyade. They know how to read Persian. They're fluent in Persian. Va'bi'inan k'tab she'enu yacholiz dayef, v'leka. You have to have writing on there that cannot be erased, or basically has to be indelible, so that somebody can't play around with the contract and erase and change the numbers or change the information inside of it. And you don't have that. So Gemara says, bidda afitzan. Now it's a case here where the parchment was tanned using this afitzan. And again, that's where we bumped into the Tosafot and this Rabbeinu Tam, that we don't use afitzim, we don't use these galls, but we use sid. Instead, we use some sort of lime base that accomplishes the same effect, which is that if you erase on it, it's noticeable, or you can see that it was erased on. Don't we need that you repeat that which said the first line of the shtar at the bottom of the shtar? Again, we discussed over there the reasons for that, either because the signatories will be then right up against it, or to know that it's the end of the shtar, so somebody doesn't come and add information afterwards. Veleka, and that's missing here as well. They did that. Over there, they did that as well in the shtar. So then what is he teaching us in the end? The b'chol lashon kasher. That it doesn't matter what language the shtar is written in, and it's good as long as they understand it and they know what they're signing to. Any language is fine by shtarot. Okay, we'll discuss this in a minute. What Rashi brings over here is that back on Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara there says that when you have this Persian contract, you're allowed to take from free and clear property, not from encumbered property. So then how come over here all of a sudden the Gemara is saying you can take from encumbered property? So Rashi notes the difference that over there was a case where Hejotot were doing it. It was done by lay people. And so by lay people, there's no call associated with it. Whereas over here, since it was done in a court, even though it was a secular court, it has a call associated with it. And that's why he allowed, even though they were done in a secular court and it was in Persian, and there were Jewish signatories to it, over here he says you can take from Mishabdei because it was done in a formal court setting. Over there it was done by lay people, so then they were willing to say the contract can be upheld, but we're not going to use that contract to collect from encumbered property because it was never publicized. It never got out in the public forum. People wouldn't know about it. Whereas if it's done in the court system, people know about it, especially if the Jews are signing on it. Right now the Gemara says, Tanina, why do you have to tell me that you can write a document, or you can write a contract in any language? We already have a Mishnah that tells you that. Get shekatavo ivrit ve'edav yivanit. If you have a get that's written in Hebrew and its signatories are Greek, yivanit ve'edav ivrit, or it's written in Greek and the signatories are writing in Hebrew, kasher, it's a Mishnah further on. What do you need to tell me this whole din over here that you can have a contract in any language? That's already known later on in the Masechta. So Gemara says, imehahi, from the Mishnah later on, avamina hani mili b'gitin. This is Masechet Gitin. And we think that the Mishnah is telling you that this is true by Gitin. Aval b'shar shtarot, lo. By other contracts, that's not the case. Kamash malon, that this has application by other shtarot as well. That language is not a barrier to the validity of a contract. As long as, again, it's understood, and the people who signed on it understood what it was, either because it was read to them by trustworthy individuals, or translated by trustworthy individuals, and then signed by people who understood it. And then the nature of where it's done, or who signed on it, will have application as to how much enforcement we will do with this contract. We will only take from free and clear property, or either from encumbered property. Amar Shmuel, Natan la niyar chalak. What happens if he hands her a blank piece of paper? Amar la harize gitech. This is your get. Migureshet. She is divorced. Chashinan shema b'mei milim katavo. We're afraid that maybe he wrote it with mei milim. Again, we already saw the mei milim before, which is the mei milim is the, as Rashi says, made out of afatzim. It's made out of gall. And so when you write with the gall on top of the parchment that's already has gall in it, the writing gets absorbed into the parchment and it's not visible. So maybe that's what you have here. You have an invisible ink that is written here. And the get is a good get. Meitvei. Hareze giteich. This is your get. Vinatalto, vizarakto liyam. Takes it, throws it into the ocean. Olo ur, or into a fire. Olo chodavar haved, or anything that destroys it. V'chazav amar. And then the Baal says afterwards, ah, shtar pasimu, shtar amanahu, megureshet. she's divorced, then he doesn't have a right to change the facts on the ground here. Shtar pasim, Rashi over here says that a shtar pasim is a shtar piyusim, which is a shtar that is used to make a person look wealthier than they really are. And basically it's a document that says this individual owes them a ton of money, and therefore they are trustworthy, creditworthy, and are rich. And so that gave them a certain amount of standing, even though the shtar is not true. He does it with someone who trusts him to write a shtar like this, and that he won't collect with that shtar. He won't come afterwards and collect. So it gives them a standing without it actually being a real shtar. That's called the shtar pasim. Shtar amana is a shtar that the creditor holds. It's basically a credit line that is opened by a creditor to a debtor. They write the contract and he leaves it in the hands of the creditor. And he says, if I draw down on the credit line, then you can use this contract as a means to collect. And he trusts the creditor not to take it out if he doesn't draw down on the line. So that's called the shtar amana. So in these cases, we say that the Baal doesn't have a right to back out afterwards and say, it wasn't a get. I didn't give you a get. Taima deikatav. From that, it sounds like, from this Tosefta, that it's only because we saw that there was something written on there. Ha lekatav lo. So that if there's nothing written on it, then you wouldn't say that. It means that there's some document that came that had writing on it. He said, this is your get, except they accept it and they try to throw it out. And it's gone. So now we have no way to verify what was written in there. But we know something was written in there, because even the Baal, when he comes back and makes a claim, he says it was a shtar pasim, a shtar amana. He says that it was something else. But he doesn't say it was a blank piece of paper. So it's clear that there was some sort of writing on it. So then how can Shmuel say that you have a blank piece of paper that you say, oh, that's a good get, if he says that. Ki kamar Shmuel, debat kinyan le b'maya denaro. No, there we check it with waters of Nara. I polit polit, I lo polit, lav klumhu. So that if it exudes, meaning that it becomes visible, that which is written on it, then we say fine. If nothing becomes visible when you do this test, then it's no good. First of all, what's this Maya Denaro? Rashi over here says, Seva Shikorim Foili, Umarvin made Seva Alav. Then you rub this pigment on top of it. Upolate Otiot Shibala. Then it exudes the letters that were already there, Vinirot. So it's this type of invisible ink that when you put this other pigment on top of it, it causes those letters to be visible, right? You know, as kids, they used to have those books where you'd color them and all of a sudden the ink would show up in them, even though it was a clear item that you were rubbing on top of them. The combination of the two chemicals causes it to be visible. So the same thing over here. That's what happens. Tosfot over here says, Mayer Denaro, Perish Rach, Mei Klipat Rimon. That is, waters from the skins of a pomegranate. So that he says that was the pigmentation that they were using over here to draw out the letters that were written there. So Gemara says, V'chi polit mayhavi. If it comes out, if afterwards it exudes the lettering that's there, and now we know there was something written there, why does it matter? Hashtahu the polit. It's not that there was writing there before, and now we can see that writing. There was nothing there before, and now you can see the writing. That's not a good get. You need to get. It needs to be written, and has to be writing on it when you hand it over. So Shmuel Nami Chashinin Kamar. Shmuel doesn't say that it is a get. He says that we worry that it is a get. We're choshesh for the fact that it was a get. So now Rashi says, what does that mean that we're choshesh that it was a get? Shemalo nivlu yafeh. Because maybe when he handed the get, it was not absorbed completely, and therefore it was a good get. So what you have here are stages along the way. When you first write with the main milin, or you write on this document, it is visible. Over time, it is absorbed into the parchment that has the same pigment in it, and then becomes invisible, which can be brought out by this other chemical with this other pigment. So what Shmuel is worried about is that interim stage. If it was blank when she got it, and then we're able to bring out the letters, it's not meaningful at all, because she didn't receive anything that had ketav on it. On the other hand, if the writing was readable or visible when she got it, but then was absorbed later on, and now through pigmentation, we can see that there was lettering there, then Shmuel's choshesh that there was a visible writing when she got the get. Now, obviously, if it turns out there's nothing there when we do the test, then it's of course not a get, and Shmuel believes it. That's what Tosfot says over here. Miu vadai ibad kine velo polit lav kumu. Certainly, if they check it and there's nothing there, then it's not a get, for sure. That we know. But even if they don't check it now, we are going to be choshesh that there was something visible there when he handed over the get. Tosfot over here, and the previous Tosfot discussed Since the Baal went ahead and said this was a get, even though there are a lot of questions surrounding the difficulty or the problems here with the get, nevertheless, we believe the husband, even with the smallest item. Why? He has the right and the ability to divorce her. And therefore, if he comes along and says, I am divorcing her and this is a get, we will take his word for it. We'll take him literally at his word and assume that it's a get. Even though there are a lot of questions about this get over here, problems with this get, we're going to assume that it is a get unless we have evidence to the contrary. And Tosfot over here says that the case is where the Edim seemingly saw it from afar. They weren't close to the get when it was given. And from afar, it looked like a blank page. So now when they come over here to look at the get, they see that it really is a blank page. So now, are we choshesh? And that's what the answer of Shmuel is. We're choshesh, that there really was a get, because the husband said it was a get, and maybe the letters were visible at some point in time. Amar Avino, Amar Li Ameimar, Hochi Amar Mereimar Mishmei Durabdimi, Hani Beitrei, Diyoy Gita Kamayu, Tzrichei the Mikre. This is something that we were expecting for a long time, and the Masechta now only shows up now, which is that the Eidei Mesira, which according to Rabbi Elozer, make this into an effective get, because Eidei Mesira Karte, they need to read the get in order for them to testify about the fact that there was a get here. That seems like obvious advice, that if you're going to be a witness to an event, that you better know what's written in this item. Meitve. Hare ze giteich, min ataltov zerakto liyam, odo or, odo chol dabar aveit, chazar amar, shtar pasim hu, shtar manahu, migureshet, v'lo kol emenu osra. So here you have that case that we just brought before from the Tosefta, which says that when you have the get and it's thrown out, that get is considered to be a good get because he said it was a good get and he can't change his mind afterwards and say it wasn't a good get. He gave it to her and then it got thrown out. So the Gemara says, "Via mar tzricha lemikre, if the Edim have to read it, batu dekaryua mi matzi amar lo hochi. How can the Baal then deny that it was a get after the Edim read the get that he had in hand? Lo tzricha, the batu dekaryua aylei lebe yadei ve'afke. After they read it, he took it back to possession of the get. And then he took it out. Maybe he switched it with another document. That he didn't do that. So again, what he does is he takes it back, meaning that the Edim read it, and then they hand it back to the Baal to give to the woman. When they hand it back to the Baal, he puts it inside his cloak, or he puts it under his hand, and then he hands her a document. So maybe we should worry about the fact that he switched the document in the interim. The answer is we don't worry about it. So even though Edim read it, and we know that it's a good get, still, you could have worried about the fact that he swatted the paper out, and maybe he's telling the truth. The answer is, we don't worry about that, and then it's considered to be a get. If he gave it as a get, and they didn't read it as a get, it's a get. And we don't even worry about him switching it out. Just to note that Tosfot over here says that when the Edim have to read it, he says that it's obvious that kodem netina ayri, that they have to read it before he gives it to the woman. And that the Edim should read the get, not once the woman has received it, but rather when before the husband gives it over to the woman, because they want to be Edim to the Mesira, and they know that the Mesira was a get that was given. We don't want them reading it after the fact to get that information. Now, V'ilo karya nirad lavi get. And he says, if you don't read it, then it won't be a get. Tosfot then later on backs away from it and says, if they don't read it, maybe that's only pasul echatchila. But if she gets married based on this get, and then they only read it afterwards and they see that it's a get, maybe that's sufficient b'di'avad to allow her to get married. And he says that Haryaragil, the really quote, kodem netina, ulachar netina. He used to have them read the get before it was given and after it was given. That way we're sure what the Baal is giving. And then when the woman gets it, we're sure what she received. And therefore they deem knew for sure and they could witness that there was a mesirat to get over here. Mibshita di lokara kodem netina, v'karda achar netina, davar pashut hu d'migureshet. Again, if they don't read it beforehand, but they read it afterwards, it's clear that she is migureshet. So Tosfot over here says that the best way to do it is to read before. The Ri has them read it before and afterwards. He says clearly if they read it afterwards, she is divorced. And if there is no reading over here, he says that b'diavad, if she gets married on that, we're not going to say it's a pasul get, but l'chatchila, we're not going to get married if the Edim never read the get. How gabra, the zarg la gita debitu, the beni dane. This individual threw a get to his wife, and it landed amongst the jars or the barrels that were there. And then they went, ishtakach mezuzta. And they went and they pulled out from the jars over there, that instead of being a get there, they find a document that is a mezuzah. So now, Amar of Nachman, mezuzta beni dani lo shchicha. People don't keep mezuzot amongst the pitchers, jars, or barrels there. And therefore, when we pick this up, we assume that's what he threw over there, and it's not a good get. That's only if they find one over there. If they find one over there, and this is not a normal place to store it, then the document that he threw at her was not a get, it was a mezuzah. The other hand, about bet v'gimel, if they find two or three of these documents, means the mezuzot there, midal havai, haminami havai. Since we assume, of course, the other two were there before this event, because he only threw one document, so too this one that we found is also that. V'gital, so where's the get that we can't find? Imor achbarim shaklua. We'll say that the mice came along and walked off some sort of rodent and walked off with the get and took it back to its hole. That's a good get that the woman is divorced based on this because he said he gave her a get. Even though we can't find the get here and we're finding other documents there. The fact that we're finding multiple documents show that the document we found is not what he threw there because otherwise we'd only find one. Finally, the fact that we found multiple documents shows that this is not what he threw there. Ah, what happened to the get? The mice walked off with the get. An individual went into a shul, shakal sefer Torah, he takes out the sefer Torah, he hands it to his wife and says, this is your get. What do we have to worry about here? If you're worried about the fact that he wrote the mei milim and that's not visible now, it doesn't matter, because the parchment has afatzim in it, the ink has afatzim in it. When you write with mei milim, it's not considered writing. So even if he did that and it's an invisible ink, it will not be considered good writing over here. Imishum kritut idba. If it's because you have the kritut in it, meaning that the parsha of Gitin is found in the Torah, habin and mekotov la. It has to be written lishma. It has to be written verb, aleka, and that's lacking over here. But let's say that when the sofer was writing the Sefer Torah, he says, write this on behalf of my wife, so it should be a get when you get to the Parsha of Gitin, write that as if it's for my wife. You need to have the names of the individuals in there, and that's lacking. Meaning that you're missing the Torah Haget. Kro takes out the word Shina. But rather, you just need Shmo, Shma, Shemiro, Shemira, and that's missing. Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmalan. So then why is Rav Yosef telling us all this information? Take Mashmalan, Shem Meimilin, Al-Gabi Meimilin. He's coming to teach us that din, that when you write with this invisible ink, because it's the same pigment as the parchment, that's not considered to be writing, and that's not a good get. And that's the Chiddush that comes out of the words of Rav Yosef. Tosfot over here discusses the fact that in Masechet Sotah, we saw that you could do this. If the Parshat Sotah was written Lishma for Mechikat Parshat Sotah, it would work. So how come it works over there by Sotah, and it doesn't work over here? Over there, you also need to be Bekot of Law. We need to be for her, or written for the specific woman. So he says, either Rav Yosef doesn't hold like that Gemara over there. It's Machloket Amoraim, and they argue over there. Inami Savak Idach Tana the Savak Ein Mochakim La Min HaTorah. Or, he holds like the other Tano who says you can't erase out of the Sefer Torah. So that's one approach that Tosfot takes, that Rav Yosef disagrees. And these are actually sugyot chalukot. The other hand, he brings V'od Nira, Tefilo man de machshim migilat sota limchok min haTorah, afagav de bai lishma modeh le'inyan get to pasul. Says now he creates a distinction that says it's not a question at all, because the migilat sota is different than the migilat gitin, or the Sefer Kritut that you need. Because by sota, gilat sota stama kasher mishum de mistama sheina kohen shalav lichtov makpid umistama nechalei, and it's useful for him. Now he has a parshat sota ready to use. Aval gavi get baal stama lo lechalei. By the get, a baal doesn't automatically assume that if you're just writing for a get, that'll be good for me. I'll use that. So what he says over here is that in order for a parshat sota to qualify as a parshat sota, that's not such a big deal because there. Lishma means it just has to be written for the purpose of being used as a parshat sota. The person who would ask for it to be written is a kohen, and the kohen is fine with having it being written ahead of time. There's no downside to them. On the other hand, the baal will not allow that to happen. He's not going to have somebody write a get out of his auspices or say, no, this is for you, or have this be lishma. And therefore, over here, he would agree that it doesn't work. You can't create the lishma within the Sefer Torah in this case, and that's how he differentiates between the two different situations. Okay, we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.